You're listening to America's Webradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to NSPS Radio Hour for another hour. I hope we're prepared to do with all the things coming up in our schedule. It's interesting to try to get so many things done all at one time. But I want to welcome Joe Paiva, who's joining me today on the show. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Kurt. Happy to be here.
We have a lot of things to talk about today. One of the things that I wanted to talk with Joe about and share with you, the audience, is I'm not really sure, Joe, what the current word is. There was a period of time when things were changing. We always talked about new paradigms. I'm not sure if that's the current phraseology for doing things differently, but I guess for lack of a better term, we can use that. For those who aren't familiar with what we've been trying to do with the NSPS in recent years was to come up with a way to do a different conference structure than what we had done in the past, which was basically to team with some other group of people, primarily usually a state surveying society for a conference. Or prior to that, we met, gosh, I don't even remember how many years, probably forever, Joe, with ASPRS. And yep. Maybe even ASP before it was ASPRS. The two organizations met together for such a long time, and it got to the point where our conferences were really more different versions of state surveying conferences, where everything was the program part was kind of targeted toward continuing education credits. And what we saw as a result of that were diminishing numbers and diminishing participation on all levels, from our vendor base as well as from people attending the conference. So we've been trying to come up with a new plan over the last few years, as you know, Joe, and to begin an effort to change that paradigm or create a new one for conferencing. We've come together with our friends over at MAPS for what we hope is the first of many collaboration map to the future type conferences, where we're having a surveying, mapping, and geospatial conference in the D.C. area, April, whatever our dates are, beginning on the 13th on Monday. A lot of different things going on there, a lot of different things that we're trying to do, and we think we have our schedule pretty well laid out now. There may be a little back and forth in that schedule as we go forward, but there's a lot of things happening, including our business meetings and MAPS business meetings for that matter. But we're going to have several federal programs involved that people can attend. We've got a really interesting keynote speaker in Jim Williams, manager of the UAS Office of FAA. Both USGS and Department of Homeland Security are meeting with us and holding a symposium or other activities. DHS is doing one on contracting with the government for our licensing data. And then USGS has agreed to come in and do a program on its 3DEP program that we support and lend ourselves to. So there's a lot of different things going on there, Joe, and in addition to the general sessions, we have a whole group of general sessions both on Monday and on Wednesday. So with all that being said, we're trying to find a way to let people know more about this conference, and I guess that kind of leads us into our conversation today, Joe, with you, because for the audience information, we've asked Joe and his team from GeoLearn to come and join us and do something that they've been doing a few other places. Matter of fact, I guess, Joe, maybe the first time I was around where you guys were doing these sort of live broadcasts, if that's the right word, maybe it was last fall when we met with the Kansas and Missouri group out in Kansas City. But that, I'm sure that wasn't the first time you've done it, though.
That's correct, but that's when many people involved with NSPS noticed it.
Right, and actually, I think several of our people even got involved in some of the person on the street interviews, if that's the right terminology.
Yeah, if you include people like Pat Smith as persons in the street, but yes, we did do
So I don't know if you've seen, well, you've seen the basic schedule that we have set up. And so maybe we could talk about that a little bit and get your perspectives on that as someone who has been involved in conferences for a really long time and a lot of the different things you've done over time, and just maybe get your feedback a little bit on what we're trying to do there.
Sure. I think one of the things about this conference is that it's quite different in concept from anything else that has occurred, at least in my memory, where we've had, first of all, MAPS as well as NSPS involved in collaborating, but then a number of government agencies who either affect the way we as surveyors do some of our work, or who kind of hold information on how we can improve our data products. And in the case of DHS, and by the way, you were using a lot of alphabet soup there, Kurt, I assume DHS is Department of Homeland Security.
That's correct, yes. I'm sorry about that. I get caught up in acronym soup here in the D.C. area, so
right.
I apologize for that.
Well, I wanted to point out the DHS thing because sometimes we as surveyors get so focused on what we do on a day-to-day basis that we don't think about all the possible recipients for data, or I should say clients, that model itself is changing, speaking of paradigm shifts, because it may be that someone collects data for some reason and then is able to make it available with different kinds of analysis and other things that the surveyor may add to the value of the data to several different clients. And I think getting a better sense of what the DHS Licensed Data Forum is going to be will be part of the reporting things that we will be doing to try and help people understand, when I say people, the members of NSPS understand what they might be able to grasp as real opportunities that they might be able to get on board with.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that from your diverse background and a number of levels related to this, what we do, I think oftentimes it's difficult for us as day-to-day practicing surveyors to fully grasp all the concept of ramifications of what agencies do, the actions they take or the activities they undertake, what impact that actually has on us. Because you were talking about, you know, we just kind of do our day-to-day work sometimes, but actually there's a lot of things that go on in those agencies that affect us. Sometimes we don't even realize that they're affecting us. I'm sure you've seen that over the years.
Yes, exactly. And I know that in general that there's some resistance to traveling to Washington, D.C. because, you know, everyone has their favorite stories about what it's like to work with the federal government, the role that the federal government plays in our lives. But the truth of the matter is that the federal government defines a lot of the things that, in the end, affect our work if we are thinking beyond simply waiting for customers to show up at our door with a request for a survey. I know that in the current climate, and this has been true for quite a while, in fact, long before we had this economic downturn, that surveyors have had constant issues with trying to identify how to develop their business to increase their revenues. And a lot of it has to do with thinking out of the box, and I really think that this conference is an opportunity to think out of the box by seeing things like the Department of Homeland Security workshop or the USGS 3DEP meeting and so forth. And then let's not forget that NGS is putting on, they're calling it the Geospatial Summit, and I believe it runs for 2 days, the first 2 days of the conference, And this is going to be talking about the National Spatial Reference System and how it's going to evolve in its next generation. And I think it's really important because I know when I go around the country doing seminars, there's a lot of a misunderstanding as to what NGS does, how it relates to a surveyor's practice, and also, this is not a plot on the part of NGS to keep itself alive by claiming that the coordinates of points have changed. Because the truth of the matter is, the more we understand about the world, the more we understand that what we think is terra firma is not quite as solid as we think it is. And so as surveying professionals, even though this may seem like a far cry from determining somebody's property line, trying to memorialize it using something like state plane coordinates or UTM means that we can't do a good job of that without understanding some of these other issues that, no pun intended, are below the surface.
Yeah, very true. And I think this symposium they're doing to talk about this is a really important one, because in my conversations with them about where things are headed in terms of the framework that we're talking about, is going to be quite a change from what we've been accustomed to seeing. And so to any practicing surveyor, we in today's world, everybody's using those satellite information and data that comes across, and the way we're going to use that in the future will be impacted by what they're talking about. So it is a really important thing to get a handle on.
Yes.
And we are a minute or so away from our first break, so I won't get too deeply into this. But one of the other things that's kind of interesting, our keynote speaker I mentioned was going to be Jim Williams from the Unmanned Aircraft Systems Office at the FAA. And when I was reading FAA, you were talking about how sometimes we as the day-to-day practitioners kind of don't recognize the impact of what's going on around us in agencies and decisions they're making. And I think that probably came full circle with a lot of people back when the light squared thing first came along a few years ago. All of a sudden, surveyors were cognizant that these actions were going to affect them. And I think that enhanced our understanding of the fact that we need to be more aware, I guess, is the best way for me to put that. And so that's part of what this conference is about, is to help us be more aware and find ways to do that in conjunction with the government agencies rather than trying to fight them. So with that, let's go to break, and we'll be right back.
Attention surveyors, are you aware that yellow stick you're using is saving lives all over the world? Yes, that Pinfinder is clearing fields and villages of unexploded cluster bombs and other hidden explosives in over 25 countries. Johnstead, in cooperation with international mine action programs, provides free locators to where they are most urgently needed. To find out how you can help, visit the NSPS website at nsps.us.com. And thank you.
This is Dr. George. Join me Wednesday mornings for Medicine on Call and participate in a lively conversation. Learn what's happening behind the headlines in medicine. Understand Obamacare. And learn how to protect yourself and navigate the system.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800-438-0387, or go to quickstake.com, that's QUIKSTAKE.com, and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quick Stakes today.
And here's something new from Schonstedt. Did you know that Schonstedt has upped the ante on trade-ins? Now you can trade in any instrument, theirs or a competitor's, in any condition, working or not, and receive more in trade than ever before. Plus, they'll pay the freight both ways. Contact your local dealer for details or go to Schonstedt.com. That's schonstedt.com.
You're listening to americaswebradio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
Back with our second segment with Joe Piva today. In our first segment, we talked in somewhat general terms about the upcoming conference that's beginning April 13th here in the Washington area and some of the aspects of that and the difference in approach to conferencing, so to speak, and bringing in people that are available to us here in the Washington, D.C. area that may or may not have been available to us if we had chosen to do this somewhere else. And as we were going to break, I mentioned that surveyors sometimes, me included, coming through my career, never really focus very much on how what all these folks do really impact us. And it seems as though, as the world has changed, that's become more and more commonplace, particularly, Joe, for us, who the ones of us who live here west or east of the Mississippi. The folks who live in BLM states have always had sort of a relationship with the government, so to speak, but a lot of us that have worked here in the eastern part of the country really didn't have that much contact with any of the government agencies, or none that we were aware of anyway, for years. And as I had mentioned, that kind of broke through the glass, if you will, when the Light Squared came about, and I think every surveyor in the country then had some thoughts about that.
That's correct. I think Light Squared may have done the profession a favor there, as traumatic as that experience was. What I was going to say in response to what you said before the break, Kurt, is that I think there's a segment of surveyors who are always looking for how to make their businesses dynamic, relevant to what the community needs. And those people sometimes give it a lot of lip service, but don't always develop the expertise to understand, for example, what a local, state, or federal regulation might be. Now, most surveyors understand if they're helping someone do development of, say, creating a subdivision, that they better be aware of the local regulations, whether that's at the county level or township level or whatever. But the truth of the matter is that there are things at higher levels that also impact your work. And I talk to surveyors all the time because I go to these conferences and they ask me questions that are in many ways or in many times driven by their clients. They come to them and say, hey, I just heard that there's going to be a new datum in 2022, or what's this about publishing new sets of geodetic coordinates for the same point that we've been using for the last 50 years. And when surveyors are at a loss to explain it, it causes all kinds of problems for what I call our community, meaning the community of professional surveyors, because we are supposed to be the experts, and people expect us to at least have a general understanding. And one of the best ways to get that general as well as more specific understanding is by developing these relationships with these federal agencies. I noticed that on Tuesday there are agency liaison presentations by DHS, USGS, USDA, DOD, the Department of Defense, as well as NOAA, which of course is the agency under which NGS falls. And I really think it's important for surveyors to understand what roles they can play, both in collecting information, but also in providing services either to these agencies or to private clients who need to somehow work with regulations or specifications that these agencies have created. And so that's one of the things that we'll be doing. We haven't talked about what we'll be doing next week exactly, but that's one of the things we're going to be trying to highlight in our post-conference wrap-up from this conference.
Right, and you know, even that one on Wednesday, I think all afternoon that USGS is doing, it's doing a stakeholders meeting on its 3DEP program, and again, right. I'm using acronyms, but again, it's rollout understanding of what's actually going to occur and how that affects people. So certainly good information to have. And speaking of that day, of Wednesday, and this is all leading up to the arrangement that we have with you and GeoLearn to help us get all this information done, and we're hopeful, we think at this point, we're going to be able to utilize that those services with us as we go on the Hill, too, because what is now called our Capitol Hill Day, there was a time we called it Lobby Day, but some people here think the word lobby is a bad thing, so it's the day we go to the Hill this time. But, again, that's another part of what one of the things that we're going to talk about here today, and that is that NSPS has contracted with Joe and his folks at GeoLearn, and I'll let him talk to you about GeoLearn in a few minutes or shortly here. But one of the things that we're hoping to do is actually have you all with us when we go to the Hill and perhaps get some live feeds, if that's possible, or at least get some information we can share with people about some of those meetings.
I don't know if it was my cue to talk about some of the things we're going to be trying to do.
Yes, please.
Okay. So what we'll be doing is we will have people who will be doing a variety of things. There's nothing more boring than simply having a camera set up in the back of the room and videotaping everything that happens. It's very hard for people to sit through I don't even know how many concurrent sessions you have multiplied by four. So that's not what our plan is. Our plan is to get the highlights by talking to people before to get some sense of the dynamism that we have in the surveying profession that's represented by the activities of people such as the students who will be wrapping up their student competition, or how they interact with legislators on the Hill, or trying to capture at least a good synopsis of how developing a relationship with many of these agencies that are there, not only having their liaisons just talk about opportunities, but then getting into detail about specific programs that they want to bring to the surveying community. And I think this is a really important thing. They really they see as their responsibility to bring this kind of information to the surveying community, and they have limited resources for doing that. So our purpose will be not again to videotape everything, but to find the high points and then write together with it information that can help surveyors get to the bottom of it if it's a topic that they're interested in but haven't been there, either because they were at the conference but with all the concurrent sessions couldn't make it, or simply haven't been able to find the time to make it to this conference next week. So we hope to be doing a lot of that, as well as doing, as you said, Kurt, man or woman in the street interviews, asking people what benefits they're getting out of the conference, why they chose to come to this conference. As they leave some of these sessions, what some of the most profitable pieces of information that they learned, what the important takeaways are, because it's possible to miss all this if you choose not to go to this conference especially, and we're trying to see if we can help fill that gap.
You spoke about the students and the finals of the student competition, which is going to be on Monday, April 13th, and I'm really excited about being able to capture some of what goes on there to share with the folks who aren't able to attend, because the student competition has been going on for quite a few years now. I think we began it maybe in 2002. If I remember correctly, we were down at a hotel in D.C. when we had our joint conference there with ASPRS and FIG. I think that was our very first one. And there was an outdoor exercise, and the program has evolved a bit since then, but the students go through a lot of work and take on a project and bring it and present it. And one of the things that I've always been really, really impressed with was how bright these students are and how well they present themselves. But nobody gets to see that who isn't in the room. So I'm really excited about the fact that you guys are going to be there to share some of that with other people. So, you know, we are constantly complaining about our future and not enough people and whether we're teaching the right things and all of those kinds of things. And there's some logic, some basis for some of that concern, I think. But it certainly is impressive to me when I attend these. And as a judge, I've done a few times and other times as an observer just to see how well these presentations are given and the work that has gone into the project over a period of time, just even before getting there. So I'm really excited about that part of it, and I know you are too.
Yeah, that, you know, that will be our first day of full day of work there, and we're going to kind of concentrate on the student competition so that we don't miss the key players. But we'll also be doing interviews with some of the team members to find out more about what got them into surveying, who's providing them mentorship or some kind of support, and what their vision of the future is for themselves as well as for surveyors. Because I think as a profession, especially because our average age is so darn high, that we really need to be aware of sometimes what appears to be inexperienced individuals telling us what they see, because what they see into the future may be quite different from what our view is from a completely different time vantage point.
Yeah, I made that comment just on the radio show this last week, again, a week ago, with the two young fellows from Louisiana. And they were so similar to the two I'd had on from Tennessee earlier, where they saw the world full of opportunities, where sometimes we look at it as the end of the world for us. And it's just very enlightening, really, and encouraging to see how they perceive things. This year, by the way, is the first year we've had a program or an option for two-year schools to participate in a different competition than the four-year schools. The two-year schools have their own program, and the four-year schools have theirs. Unfortunately, we only had one two-year school come in, so they will be there with their presentation, but there won't be any other people there in competition with them. We'll have seven teams then from the four-year programs. So we're really looking forward to that and looking forward to what you guys are going to do. And I see we're ready to go to the next break. And when we come back, I want to talk some about how people can key into what you're doing, if there's a way they can do it when you're doing it live, or, you know, those kind of things. Let's talk a little bit about those logistics when we get back from the break.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
Quickstakes. Does your survey supply dealer have Quickstakes? If not, demand that they start carrying Quickstakes. Did you know that Quickstakes are better for your back than your local chiropractor? Lightweight and easier to use than the old heavy wooden stake. Order a sample today and prove it to yourself. Quickstakes, your back-friendly stake.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on AmericasWebRadio.com.
Did you miss a show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back for our third segment today with Joe Piva, and of course our regular listeners know this is the time of the show when we have our Parker Davis Quick Stakes contest for the week. I'm going to ask Joe a question, and he will give the answer. And first listener who emails in to quickstakescontest@americaswebradio.com will be our winner for the day. So we've been talking, Joe, about the work that you're going to help us with as we go into this conference. And so perhaps it would be a good question to ask if you would just tell the people the name of the company that you have.
Sure. The name of the company is GeoLearn, and that's G-E-O-L-E-A-R-N. And the way we like to do it is to capitalize the G and the L, but probably you won't take points off for capitalization.
No, I suppose not. So the question answer today is GeoLearn. Thanks for sharing that with us. Couple things I wanted to talk to you about as we move ahead, and one is how people are going to be able to take advantage of the work you're going to do and the sharing of the information. But maybe before we go into that, maybe it might be worth a little bit for some of the audience, in case there's anybody listening who doesn't know you, Joe, talk a little bit about your background and what led you to this type of opportunity in GeoLearn.
Sure. Well, I'm proud to say that I started life as a civil engineer, and actually all my degrees are in civil engineering. But as time progressed through my educational career, which, by the way, was not 3 degrees in swift succession, I took time out to work in between the degrees, was that I developed more and more surveying flavor to my academic content because my work required more and more of it. Somewhere in my master's program, I became a teacher of surveying, and I discovered one of the best ways to learn a subject is to teach it, even if it's to newbie freshmen or sophomores in college who don't know how to spell surveying. You still have to, in my opinion anyway, really understand it deeper than the understanding that they would take away once the course is over. And so I discovered that teaching was fun and that surveying was funner. And so I'm pleased to say that when I became licensed, I got licensed first as a surveyor and only second as an engineer. I'm also proud to say that when I hand out a business card, you'll notice that I had PS first and PE second. But to the more recent future, Bob Morris, a partner of mine, and I got together about 2.5 years ago and put together this concept for a company called GeoLearn to provide learning online. And the reason behind this is if you look at society around us, whether it's professional societies or your kids or your grandkids, everybody's doing everything online, and that there's going to be a trend away from face-to-face education, even though Bob and I really believe that the highest quality of learning probably can occur there, at least for complicated subjects. But we also saw the need for convenience, maybe for cost reduction, because there are many surveyors who have limited budgets or limited time, or who have a need for content that maybe is not being served up at their local conference, because this is not the year for that particular topic. So that's why we put this program together, and we actually are working. We reached out to different state societies to work collaboratively with them, and as the months go by, we'll be rolling out more information about that. So our content is served up in kind of what I call the lecture style. So pretty much what you are used to seeing at a surveying conference. So you might see a Gary Kent or a Wendy Lathrop or a Dave Doyle presenting on topics that they're experts at. And by the way, all three of them are part of our faculty. And so we use video. We have a sophisticated digital studio where we record these courses using a variety of multimedia techniques to make it as interesting as possible when you invite one of these people to your desktop or your living room or wherever you happen to have them on your computer to learn. And while we know that there's a need among the great majority of the states to accumulate continuing education to satisfy land surveying boards, our purpose is actually a lot more altruistic. You know, it's to serve people who really need to learn or need to refresh what they learned a long time ago because there's a situation that requires them or their people, for that matter, because we have a lot of technicians taking professional-level courses just because they're being sent in the field to come back with data that the professionals are eventually responsible for, and they want them to have that same understanding. So in the course of creating all this video, we became experts at doing a variety of video production, and we discovered it was also handy to have the video production capability for doing some of our marketing, and that's what's led us to partnerships with different organizations, including NSPS, to try to bring some of the relevant content that occurs at some of these important events to the greater membership rather than just limiting it only to the people attending.
Yes, one of the things that is of interest, I'm sure, to the audience, and I have a question about too, is certainly this approach where people can get this access to what they need online. What are the impediments, I guess is the right word to ask, to getting to a point where there would be some sort of way to do that interactively? Because, you know, if you're in a classroom setting, you can raise your hand or whatever. I just don't have any idea what it would entail to try to do something like you're doing that way. It would seem to me to be difficult to do because you're maybe reaching out to a lot of people at one time. And, of course, if it's pre-recorded, you couldn't do that anyway. But right. I was just curious if that was down the road or even if that's even something that's feasible in today.
Yes, so we intentionally, only because as a startup we have to watch our pennies, started with online content that's what's called asynchronous. So it's pre-recorded. What we do, however, do, because some states actually require this type of interaction, we'll ask quizzes periodically, quiz questions during the presentation. And at the end, generally, it's an optional final exam before you can get your certificate. But it's optional only because not all states require this final exam for your educational content. But our plan is, as time goes on and we become more and more successful, to offer, first of all, webinars. And I know people are not necessarily fans of webinars, but our webinars will be similar to the online content in that you will actually see your presenter to be able to ask questions either in writing or by voice, depending on how many people we limit the attendance to. You can imagine if we had 10,000 people listening and we allowed voice questioning, that would be pandemonium. But so we're planning to move into that and also to have small class settings. Obviously, they would have to be a lot more expensive than our asynchronous offerings, where people will be in remote places, similar to the way college graduate classes are asked, where you might meet for a series of lectures, and either with each lecture or very often, as it's done in graduate school, once a week there's a forum, a discussion forum, where everybody's live. The instructor is on video usually, although the students are often just heard audio only. So those are some of the plans we have looking down the track.
Has, Hasn't there been some effort at some of the colleges to do some of that, even in the surveying programs? I seem to remember there was a time when Knut Hermansson, some of his folks were looking into doing that, and maybe some other people. I don't really know if it ever materialized, but I know there was some discussion about that.
Well, I know that in the graduate student programs at many schools, this type of thing is already happening. It's sometimes hard to make sure that undergraduates are getting the equivalent experience. Having been an ABET evaluator and ABET commissioner, I know one of the big concerns we used to have when we visited a program, and I suspect that's still the case today, is if you are getting your content online for a university program, for a university course, is that equivalent experience to what you would get in the classroom? And when you have Surveying 1, which is a lab course, that can be hard to do.
Right.
So you have some issues there. Now, if you have a lab that involves sitting in a computer room and doing something, whether that's a design or a GIS or something like that, you can still have that kind of interaction, but there's nothing like hands-on to understand some of the principles of error propagation, for example, that is almost impossible to do by some kind of computer simulation. And so different schools have come up with different solutions, and we'll see as they come up for review by ABET how much ABET likes those. But I feel confident because I've participated in a couple of those, just trying to help design them as a non-ABET person, as faculty. And I feel confident that there are people getting some good learning down. Usually when it's a lab, it involves finding a mentor who has all the equipment that you would use in a lab, who essentially supervises you and acts as your lab instructor, with the grading and everything else being done by the same person as grading the on-campus students and using the same standards for performance.
Right. You know, with all the discussion we've been having this morning and all of this kind of leading up to our final segment when we come back, but in the whole arena of social media from you guys coming to our conference, and we'll talk a little bit more about that, about how people can access that, and to the things you're talking about with what you guys are doing and colleges are doing, it just brings to mind more strongly than ever the whole concept of social media and how important it is, and how important it is for all of us, whether we come kicking and screaming or however we get to it, to really become more adept at dealing with social media and utilizing it to advance whatever it is we're doing, whether it's as a membership organization like NSPS and the state societies, or someone who's running a business and providing professional services, surveying, engineering, whatever they may be, to the educational side of things. So clearly, the whole concept of social media is one that I think we in the surveying profession, particularly people in my age group, need to think more about and be more familiar with, because, as I've said on here before, not knowing it as well as I should even impacts my ability to communicate with my grandchildren sometimes. So it's time for a break. When we come back, let's talk about that.
Schonstedt Instrument Company has been making locating easier since 1953. First, with its yellow stick, the GA52CX, the industry standard for sensitivity. Then, the GA72CD, a shorter and more rugged version offering a magnetic polarity display and a battery and sensitivity indicator. And most recently, the GA92XT, built for portability. It retracts to fit in its holster and extends for one-handed operation and fingertip control. See them all at schonstedt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
With all the back and forth in today's politics, it seems as though the Constitution gets lost in the mix. If you want to brush up on your Constitution, then join Michael Conley every Wednesday from 4 to 5 p.m. for the show Our Constitution on americaswebradio.com.
Quick Stakes is your answer to staking. Lightweight, easy to ride on, easy to use, easy to find, and won't break your back carrying them like the old-fashioned wooden stakes. Have you tried a sample? If not, get a pen and paper and write down this number, 800 888-438-0387 or go to quickstake.com. That's QUIKSTAKE.com and order your samples. Ask your surveying supply dealer for Quickstakes today.
Getting into underground utility location? If so, you'll want to know about the Schonstadt Instrument Company's MPC kit, a multi-purpose combo for locating both ferrous objects and underground pipes and cables. And because it consists of two instruments in one package, it qualifies for trade-in allowances on two locators. Any kind, any make, any condition. Contact your dealer for details. Or visit www.schonstadt.com. That's S-C-H-O-N-S-T-E-D-T.com.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.
We're back for our last segment with Joe Piven today. And before we went to break, we were talking about the social media thing, and I do want Joe to talk about that because whether it's professional use or family use, or whatever the case may be, just through our businesses, it's, I want to talk about the importance of that and how we can better utilize it. But I did, before we go to that, Joe, I wanted to have you talk a little bit about what's our access mechanism going to be for people to be able to see what you guys are doing for us during the conference.
So you mentioned live earlier. And unfortunately, they won't be live, but there will be a little bit of what I would call near live, where if you're able to capture short clips, short interesting things, pictures, video clips, and so forth, we will put them on the primary social media that NSPS has, which includes Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. And we won't necessarily put all the... But we won't necessarily replicate every posting in all those media because we know different people like to see different things. So you can expect Facebook and Twitter, for example, to have the more amusing or less serious things, although there will be serious things there as well, whereas the LinkedIn, for example, will have the more serious stuff. Every night we'll be looking at what we've captured and figure out what we need to... edit, or that we can edit with the resources we have since we'll be traveling, to put up on the YouTube channel. NSPS has a YouTube channel, as well as on the social media sites where the video perhaps didn't come out as nice or a picture didn't come out as nice, and we need some time to do some editing. So those would be the primary ways of doing it, and then after the fact, we'll do one or more, depending on how much we capture and how we divide it up, one or more compilation videos with some commentary to help people navigate the information that's being presented. And these will also go on the NSPS YouTube channel. And in News and Views, you will be getting information with links to these things as they become available. So those will be the primary methods, Kurt. I will say this, that LinkedIn seems to be, that from our experience at GeoLearn and trying to communicate with the, well, not just the surveying profession, but all geospatial professionals, that the most dominant social media, which sometimes people don't even think of as social media, is LinkedIn. Next comes Facebook, and third comes Twitter. But the YouTube channel is often ignored. It's a great place for us to put videos and have whole albums that are relevant to a particular topic or subject, and we hope to populate that quite well. We created, we helped NSPS create a YouTube channel, so we'll be helping to populate it. One thing I would ask people to do is, if they're interested in seeing some of our longer videos, simply go to YouTube and in the search window, once you bring up the YouTube website, type NSPS, and you'll eventually get to a choice where it asks you if you want what's referred to as the YouTube, as referred to as the NSPS channel. And that's the one you'd be selecting to see all the videos that actually the channel was created by NSPS, and that was created back at the Missouri Conference, Missouri-Kansas Conference back in October.
Well, thanks. Appreciate you sharing that with everybody, because we definitely want people to know where they can find the information about what's going on at the conference and all the things we want to share related to it. And, you know, just thinking of that whole social media concept thing again, I mean, it's almost become intertwined in everyday life. At the break, you and I were talking about Facebook and how people, I'm not a big Facebook user. Looks like I'm going to need to be to keep up with family more, but a lot of people use Facebook and all of the different types of social media. But in your experience, and I'm asking this question somewhat out of my own ignorance, but are you seeing a lot of the social media now becoming part of the interwoven into the fabric of how companies reach people and the public?
Yes. So it's very much become the way people do business. And for surveyors, I think this is a really important thing to realize. Even the FAA now tweets and uses Facebook. I don't remember if they use LinkedIn in addition to sending out emails. What's great about this is you can get these forwarded to your phone, so while you might not have the time to look at it, you can forward it to other people who maybe need to chase it down, or you can put something in your memory bank to go look at it when you have more time. The thing that I want to encourage people to do is, at least from the informal conversations I've had over the last couple of years, many surveyors don't have Facebook pages. You know, they think it's totally irrelevant because they don't have any reason to broadcast to the world the last time they took out the trash and took a selfie, for example, just being a little facetious here, but I wouldn't be surprised if people post pictures like that. And what I tell people is think of social media as one of your professional faces to the world. So even if you do have a Facebook page, and let's say you're Kurt Sumner, maybe your Facebook page has been set up as Kurt Sumner, and this is where your pictures of your grandchildren might show up or something like that. Well, I would recommend don't use that for your professional face to the world. Create another Facebook page, maybe call it Curtis Sumner or Curtis Sumner PLS or Curtis Sumner Licensed Surveyor or Curtis Sumner LLC or something like that, and use it just for your professional for the professional information you wish to share, which can also include things that tend to be a little bit scrapbooky, such as pictures of your team members or team members working in the field or in the office, important clients who've paid you a visit, you know, those kinds of things as well. I also want to encourage people, and Kurt, stop me when you want to call it quits, but I wanted to just move on to Twitter and LinkedIn.
Yes, go right ahead.
LinkedIn is probably the most dominant professional social media that's used by surveyors, and I just wanted to point out that if you haven't created a LinkedIn page, again, for your professional face to the world, do that. It's a really great way to do it, and you can go and connect with the National Society of Professional Surveyors if you're looking for someone to connect with to start with. Finally, a lot of people have a lot of issues with Twitter. You know, why do I need to tweet? Well, I was the same way until I started GeoLearn, and I realized not only is Twitter a great way for me to keep track on what a lot of agencies are doing, like the FAA, because I've been a UAS buff now for about 5 years, but it's also a way for me to connect with other allied fields. For example, I follow several realtors associations and a group of title insurance people and lawyers and so forth. And by doing that, they get to see what you put out there, and you become a little bit more associated with surveying when that topic comes up and they have some need for your expertise. So there's different ways of managing it, and we hope to do some courses actually on GeoLearn about doing that. But I just wanted to throw that out that it's in addition to helping you communicate with your children and grandchildren, that if you create professional pages for your business or for yourself, it can be a great start to connecting with a lot of people that you have. Cold calling is not your favorite activity when it comes to customers, but also keeping track of things going on at DHS or USGS and NGS, because they all have Twitter feeds as well.
Yeah, I would be willing to bet that there's a fairly large number of the survey population for whom cold calling is not the greatest thing in the world. And, of course, I think back to my college days as a student working part-time selling Sears and Roebuck appliances door-to-door at night. And it terrifies me to think about that.
Yeah.
But I certainly understand and appreciate what you're saying, that we all need to become more proficient at doing these things. And I think maybe just overcoming some of the fears of some of the things you pointed out earlier, you know, just recognizing that there are ways to do this without being too intimidated by it or afraid somebody may misuse your information or whatever the case may be. So we've got a couple minutes left, maybe 2.5 minutes before it's time to go today. So before we get too far along, I want to thank you for being with me today, in particular to talk about what's going to happen at the conference and providing information for people to be able to access and learn more about what we're doing there. And the overall discussion about social media, too. I think it's an important thing we all have to talk about and become more familiar with. So I don't know if you have any last things you'd like to share before we go on that.
Yes, welcome. I think I probably will want to just reemphasize what I said earlier, which is that a lot of people have kind of looked down their noses a little bit at things like Facebook, and I think for good reason. But think of a professional appearance, meaning your business or some formal way of saying your name, as a separate treatment. If Facebook doesn't prevent you from having more than one account, so that you can communicate in a professional way with your professional colleagues, as well as government agencies, allied professions, and so forth. Many people have a lot of trouble approaching a lawyer to come speak at their bar association meeting or something like that. Well, this could be a good door opener by simply following the Twitter feed of your local bar association.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, and something that we all strive to try to do better, and so this is a good way to do it. As you said, even if there's an intimidation to go up and say, how about if I speak at your next meeting? At least this is a way to reach out to people and a mechanism that other people are using. So that does make a lot of sense for access. Well, I'm really looking forward to our conference coming up, Joe, and really excited about this potential we have to reach out to people and let them know what's going on there. And hopefully that will spur interest as we move ahead and move forward, and we're able to expand this conference further down the road and bring in more of our geospatial organizations to join us. That was the overall goal to start with, was to create this to be more of an all-encompassing conference. So I think with your help, that's going to help us do that. So it looks like it's time to go, and I just want to say thanks again for being with me today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks.
You're listening to AmericasWebRadio.com, the pioneer and leader in chat radio. Thank you for listening.